Extraordinary Experiments. Stories of Remarkable Psychics. In a moment, our special guest on Coast to Coast, and what a ride it will be, Dr. Gary Schwartz, right here on Coast to Coast AM. Dr. Gary Schwartz, PhD type, professor of psychology, medicine, neurology, psychiatry, and surgery at the University of Arizona, and the director of its Human Energy Systems Laboratory. After receiving his doctorate from Harvard, he served as a professor of psychology and psychiatry at Yale University, director of the Yale Psychophysiology Center, and the co-director of the Yale Behavioral Medicine Clinic. He has published more than 400 scientific papers, edited 11 academic books, and is the co-author with Linda Rusek, PhD, of the Living Energy Universe. He's our special guest tonight on Coast to Coast. And welcome back, Gary. It's been way too long. How are you?
Wonderful, thanks. And how are you?
I'm doing great. Life has been good, and you look like you've been busy.
That's what they tell me.
Gary, the work with the medium, of course, Alison Dubois, we're going to talk a lot about. But before we get into that, what have you been doing in terms of experiments these days? You still at it?
Yes. We've been actually doing more research in the areas of that integrate mind-body medicine, energy medicine, and spiritual medicine. And I have an NIH center that that does a lot of that research. The mediumship research is actually, although it's more visible to the public, actually involves less of my time. As you know, I completed a previous book called The Afterlife Experiments, which I think I actually did a radio show on a while back.
Yes, you did. It was back in April of 2004, I think.
Right. And the, as you know, I had the privilege to work with a remarkable group of mediums, including George Anderson and John Edward and Suzanne Northrup. And the show tonight about the book The Truth About Medium is actually a continuation of that research with many more surprises.
How did you get the research underway? Because that fascinates me all by itself.
Well, it was certainly not purposeful on my account. It began partly for theoretical reasons. When I was a professor at Yale, I have a pet interest in physics, and I was fascinated by the nature of light. Because, you know, when we look up at the stars at night, what we're actually seeing is a history of starlight. You know, we look at stars which are emitting light, and these stars the light's been traveling, you know, for thousands or millions of years.
The stars could have been burned out a long time ago.
Exactly. In fact, what we're looking up at what we see is actually a history of the starlight, and the starlight could long have, quote, died, and the light is still there. In fact, if the light wasn't still there and it wasn't stored in the, quote, vacuum of space, we'd have no astrophysics, and the sky would just look like a gray, you know, mess. But that's not the way nature works. And our light, our energy and information is no different than the light from distant stars. In fact, we now know, you know, with SPICE satellites and so on, that our light goes into space, both reflected light, both visible and invisible, as well as all the radio and other transmission that our bodies emit too. And I said, gee, you know, if our light is like the light from distant stars, our energy and information, then maybe our consciousness could survive bodily death just like the stars' information does. However, it's one thing, you know, to be open to this scientifically. It's another thing actually to do research in the area. And that's where the personal side came in. I originally met a woman who was a partner for a while, Dr. Linda Rusek, and her father had been a distinguished cardiologist. And when he died quite suddenly, Linda lost not just a father that she loved, but also a colleague and a best friend.
For sure, yeah.
And then Linda went on this quest, both personal and the scientific. She wanted to know, if there's some way, could she prove whether her deceased physician father was still here. And then I met this woman, Susie Smith, for whom the book The Truth About Medium is dedicated. And when I met Susie, she was 83 years old. She had published 29 books in the field of parapsychology and survival of consciousness after death. And Susie actually became my adopted grandmother. She used to call me her illegitimate grandson. And as I'm fond of telling people, Susie couldn't wait to die so she could prove that she was still here. Now, Susie had lost her mother when Susie was in her mid-40s. And Susie began a quest way back then, initially as a skeptical journalist, saying, how do I know whether these experiences that she was having of her mother's presence, whether this was just a fantasy or whether her mother was still here? So I guess the soundbite is that I was pushed there by theory, you know, by science and data, but I was pulled there by love, by Linda's love for her father, by Susie's love for her mother. And when you're pushed and pulled in the same direction, it's very hard to resist. So that's actually how the work began.
Didn't you also have this incredible curiosity, Gary, because here you are, I mean, degreed, PhD, professor of psychology, medicine, neurology. I mean, that's a pretty extensive resume, a true scientist. And all of a sudden, you're going in a direction, you're following a path that not a lot of people with your background would go.
I think it's putting it mildly. In fact, when I began this research, to tell you the truth, initially with Linda, I told Linda I would help her, but only under one condition. We didn't tell anyone. In fact, the research was begun. It began in secret. But it's true. I do have an amazement with the universe, and I have a natural curiosity. I mean, I was always asking questions as a kid, which hasn't stopped today. I'm basically an 11-year-old at heart. In fact, once a graduate student when I was at Yale diagnosed my problem, as he put it, which was really a very lovely thing to say. He said, you know what your problem is, Gary? He says, you have an overdeveloped sense of wonder. So I would have to say, yes, you're right, Richard, that it begins with just a fascination and a curiosity to want to know the truth, whatever it is.
Well, you know what? And that's a problem that faces all of us, and we should all be blessed with that problem that you have. Tell me a little bit about how you met Alison Dubois, who, of course, is what the television show Medium has been built around.
Yes. Well, when I met Alison, first of all, it was a complete surprise. And secondly, she was then an unknown, medium in training, as many of these people have been. For example, John Edward, by the way, when I first began working with him, he was unknown to the general public. He didn't have his television show then. And it was certainly the same with Alison. She and her then mentor, Catherine Yant, had scheduled an appointment to come see me at my office at the University of Arizona. And the timing was synchronistic because the day before, it turned out that Susie Smith, this woman who I dearly loved, had suddenly died. She literally dropped dead of a heart attack just prior to her 90th birthday. And as you can guess, virtually no one knew that this had happened yet because it hadn't been announced to anyone. And anyway, Alison and Catherine came to my office to talk to me about the possibility of participating in research. Apparently, Alison had seen a program on Dateline, which featured John Edward. It included some research that I had done with him. And she claims that her, quote, spirit guides told her that she was meant to come and see me to be tested, to see whether she really had this gift. So anyway, there is this very attractive, bright, strong woman, young woman, when her mentor, in my office. And because Susie had just died, you know, I had now lost a loved one and someone who really cared about this research.
Sure.
So I did something I never did before, and just spontaneously, I told both of them, I said, look, I said, recently, someone who I knew and loved died. And if you'd be willing, I'd like to do an informal experiment and see if you can receive any information about Susie, okay? Because I was, as you know, not just curious about their own potential talent, but more importantly, I wanted to know whether Susie was still here.
Of course.
And They went on to do a reading, the two of them. It was brief, but it was remarkably evidential. And it set the stage for the whole series of experiments that we then did over a four-year period. Now, some of the information that that mediums give, it can be very vague or general. For example, Allison said she saw an older woman who had died, a grandmother-like figure. Well, you know, most of us have an older woman grandmother figure who has died. And you could say, well, that's just a vague, general piece of information. But it also happened to be true. I mean, that was the person I wanted to hear from. But that didn't mean it was necessarily Susie, right? It could have been any number of people.
Anyone, exactly.
Right. But then, on the other hand, they gave information such as, this woman is showing me the newspaper. That's what Allison said. And then the Catherine chimed in and said, yes, and there's something about an obituary that is important to the sitter. Well, what they didn't know was that Susie, who had died, and they didn't know it was Susie, Susie had been a journalist. And Susie, it turns out, had written her own obituary. And she had actually read her obituary to me. Susie insisted upon doing this. And by the way, I don't know about you, but most people that I know do not read me their obituaries.
No.
Okay.
It's not something that would occur all the time.
Right. And also, it is not the case that after they die, you are the person who then gives their obituary to the newspaper.
Oh, my God.
Right? So the fact that Susie was a newspaper reporter and that this obituary was just appearing in the Tucson newspaper that very morning. And by the way, these people came from Phoenix, and they had no way of knowing that this was was occurring. That kind of information said, it looks like there's something real here. And that's how it began.
And it began in a big way, didn't it?
Absolutely. I mean, it began, first of all, in an evidential way, although it was obviously informal. But it was also meaningful for me because this was the start of the possibility of someone who had devoted 40 years of her life, more than 40 years of her life, to this work, that she might be able to prove her existence after she died. Beginning with these two mediums, plus another one, Laurie Campbell, who had actually done a secret reading the night before. So it was very, propitious and auspicious.
The ability of Alison Dubois, at her young age, it was absolutely incredible. Did she talk at all about her life as a child? I mean, did anything specifically happen to her, Gary?
Certainly at the time of our meeting, we spoke, relatively briefly. But she did share with me that she had had this gift since she was a young child, that it also had run somewhat in her family. She claimed to me, quite matter-of-factly, almost brashly, that she said, that she sees dead people. Now, by the way, most mediums don't see. That is not, they don't see in the physical world.
They
feel or they hear or they see, quote, in their mind's eye, something described as a movie in their head. But Allison claimed that she actually saw in the physical world, like the little boy in the Sixth Sense. And of course, at that time, I had no way of knowing whether her perceptions were accurate or not. But she apparently, just had this gift at an early age, and it was very much a challenge for her to cope with it and to come to it, accept it, and then finally to use it in the special ways that she does.
What kind of experiments, based on your scientific study, do you put people like Allison through in order to verify that there's something very unusual here?
Well, we do all kinds of experiments. Probably the most stringent, if you would, the ultimate tests are what are called double-blind or triple-blind experiments. And toward in Chapter 6 of the book, The Truth About Medium, I actually have a chapter called Believing a Triple-Blind Experiment. And if you'd like, we could briefly talk about what that kind of a design is.
Sure.
It's what a double-blind experiment means, which is the gold standard in medical science, is that neither the person who's prescribing the medication versus a placebo, nor the patient who's receiving the medication or the placebo, knows the conditions that they're in. So that's what makes it double-blind. Now, what my colleague, Dr. Julie Beischel, and I did was we designed an even more complicated experiment called the triple-blind. And what this does is it rules out any possibility of fraud or cold reading or rater bias on the part of the people who are, looking at this information, or experimenter communication, as a possible explanation of the results. Okay, and here's how it works. We, in this particular experiment, we had 8 students, University of Arizona undergraduates, who were selected from a large sample of people who had someone who died. Okay, 4 of the people who had died were peers, and 4 of them were parents or older individuals.
All right.
And what we did was we paired the people so that there would be, let's say, a female peer versus a female older person, because this way there would be a potentially clear difference between because of their age difference in terms of their lives and so on. Then what happened was, now these individuals were selected by a research assistant, okay? So only the research assistant knew the identity of the
peers. And did you pass on a lot of people as well?
Oh, yes, absolutely.
Okay.
So we screened almost 1,600 people to get a group of individuals who met a whole set of criteria, including having deceased loved ones, being interested in the research, feeling very close to these individuals, and so on, willing to score the data under these triple-blind conditions and so on. Okay, so that's the first start. Then what happened was an experimenter, who in this case was Julie Beischel, who was blind to who the sitters were and who the identity of the deceased, Julie served as what we call a proxy sitter, meaning that Julie actually ran the experiment with the mediums, and the undergraduate students were not present at the time that the readings took place. So think about this. Julie calls a medium who could be in Phoenix, like Allison.
All right, didn't have to be there.
Right, or could be in California, Irvine, California, like Lori Campbell, or the whole group of various people around the country. And Julie would only be given the first name of the deceased person. So let's say Robert. Now, that doesn't tell you too much, right? How many millions of deceased Roberts are there, right?
Exactly.
Okay. And she would say, okay, Allison, there's a deceased person by the name of Robert. Could you, and the sitter who's not present and who I do not know has been told that the reading is going to take place right now, and so that they're hoping that their loved one would show up. Now, could you please try to contact this person and receive whatever information you can? Also, in this experiment, Julie would ask specific questions such as, what does the person look like? How did they die? What's their personality? What are their hobbies? And so on, very specific kinds of questions. Now, of course, Julie doesn't know whether the information is correct because she doesn't know who they are.
No way to verify it.
Right. And the medium doesn't know, okay? So then both Julie, the experimenter, and the medium is also blind. Then all that information is transcribed. And the sitter is now given 2 transcripts. One is their transcript, and the other is the control transcript of the other person. They don't know which is which.
Do you think that the medium does remote viewing?
Ah, that's a good question, and I think that's something we should get back to.
When we come right back on Coast to Coast AM. And our special guest tonight, Dr. Gary Schwartz, we're talking about medium. When we come right back on Coast to Coast AM, don't go away. I'm going to talk about an incredible story with Dr. Schwartz about Deepak Chopra in just a moment. But we're talking about your experiments, the way you handle it, Gary. And, of course, the big question is are they possibly remote viewing into the other plane?
Absolutely. Because, you see, once you get positive results in these kind of super-controlled experiments, like these triple-blind experiments, these experiments do not actually tell us where the information is coming from, right, or how the mediums are getting it. All they do is tell us that the mediums are doing something by some sort of paranormal or anomalous or extraordinary means. And there are various possibilities, including that the medium could be reading the mind of the sitter, although that's improbable in this case, and the sitter was actually Julie, who was running the experiment.
Right.
You then have to say that, well, she wasn't reading the mind of the sitter, but what she was doing was somehow connecting to either the living person who was not present at the time the experiment was taking place physically, or was remote viewing the information actually out into space, you know, in the quote zero point field, or whatever language you wish to use for this, the quantum hologram, and then is just pulling that information out, but it's essentially quote dead information, right? Or the question is the medium actually speaking with the living spirit of the person who's deceased? And the kind of experiment I just described, it doesn't distinguish between those. That's why you do other kinds of research.
All right. Now, there is a story here that has to do with Alison Dubois and, of course, the very well-known Deepak Chopra. Tell us this.
Yes. That was truly a remarkable experience. Deepak Chopra had written the foreword to my previous book with Bill Simon, which was called The Afterlife Experiments. And Deepak is very open to the idea of survival of consciousness after death. And then what happened was his father died after our book was published. But Deepak had never had a reading with a really gifted research medium. So he called me secretly and said, Gary, could you arrange for a reading? And I said, yes, I could. I said, but I recommended to Deepak that since he was interested in research, that what we should do is design it as an experiment. And not only that, instead of having one medium, he should have at least three mediums so he could experience how different mediums work.
Right. Either they're all right or partially, or they're all wrong.
Exactly. So what I did was I selected three different mediums who were in different parts of the country. There was Laurie Campbell on the West Coast, Allison who was in Phoenix, and then Mary Occhino, who's a phenomenally gifted medium, who's on Long Island. And what I told each of these three people was that there was an important reading that was going to take place, and that I could not, of course, tell them any information, and that, moreover, what I wanted them to attempt to do is to contact Susie Smith. Each of these people had previously read for the late Susie Smith, but has read since Susie had died and gotten accurate information, and that they were to contact Susie, and that Susie would bring, you ready for this? The deceased Susie would bring the secret sitters, deceased the loved ones, to them. We call this the double deceased paradigm.
She'd round them up and bring them with her.
She'd round them up and bring them with her. In scientific jargon, Susie functions as a departed hypothesized co-investigator. Okay? So what they would then do is they would then conduct a reading in the privacy of their own home and write the information down before they actually spoke with me. Okay? So they'd get information before the reading began. Then what I did was I flew to La Costa, the resort where Deepak's new center had just moved to. And we had the ID of the phone blocked, so when I called them, they had no idea where I was. And what I did was I called each of them and asked them to first read into the, for the record, what they had received prior to the reading began. I then asked them for the next 20 minutes to receive whatever information they could about the deceased loved ones of the sitter. Again, they don't know who the sitter is, male or female, young or old, or whatever, where this person is. And then once that official part of the experiment was over, okay, then and only then would they be allowed to speak with the secret sitter, at which point the formal experiment was officially over. And this way they could then discover that it indeed was Deepak Chopra, and that they could speak. And then so Deepak could have a real personal experience. So we ran this experiment with the three separate mediums. And we then had the information transcribed, that is the part before they knew that it was Deepak. And then Deepak scored this particularly for his father, and I scored the information as if it was my father, okay? So I served as a control. And the question is, to what extent did these people get accurate information about Deepak's father, and to what extent did this information not simultaneously apply to my father? That was basically this experiment. And much to my, you know, continued amazement, I'm always amazed, by the way, by the fact that this works. When Deepak scored the information and I scored the information, approximately 80% of it was accurate, highly accurate, and fit his father, and only about 25% of it fit my father. And it was very interesting about how some of these, you know, these details were. For example, one of the mediums said that the father was a very successful and famous person, and that he was also quite handsome. Well, that really did fit Deepak's father. He had been a famous physician, treated politicians and so on in India, and he was a very handsome man. My father was not a famous person, did not know famous people, and if you took one of my photo of my father versus a photo of Deepak's father, and you say which man was handsome, you wouldn't have picked my father. Also, they got information about details such as, for example, seeing the pictures of the family at a beach on Long Island in the Hamptons. Well, there were no pictures of my family at the beach in the Hamptons. My family, if they went to the beach, went to Jones Beach or went to Fire Island. But it turned out that Deepak's family did have pictures of his father.
Well, why do you think, Gary, that his was so accurate, 80%, and yours was not,
because
hovering
they,
around the 20%?
Because Susie's task was to bring his father to the mediums, not mine. If Susie was bringing my father to the mediums, then it should have reversed. The information should have been 80% accurate for my father and 25% accurate for his.
So it wasn't as if your father was going to pop up too.
Well, sometimes my family does drop in uninvited to a
typical relatives.
Typical relatives, especially my mother, because my mother was bigger than life in this life, and apparently she shows up bigger than life in the next. Which, by the way, is one of the ways of proving that the information is not dead information, but as if you would, the deceased have a mind of their own, and they act that way, just like you and I do. So, but there were also other kinds of details that were just extraordinary. My favorite piece of information in that one experiment was when Mary Occhino said that she saw this uncle of the deceased, and that this uncle was showing that he had some sort of a problem with his throat, like throat cancer, and that his vocal cords had been removed before he died.
Oh, my.
Okay, now, you know, I've witnessed hundreds of research readings, and there have been a few occasions where mediums have said that a person had throat cancer. But up to that point, no medium had ever said that the deceased was showing them that his vocal cords had been removed.
Right, not that specific.
Not that specific, and not with such a unique event. It turns out that Deepak did have a very favored uncle, that this uncle was deceased, that he did have throat cancer, and his vocal cords had been removed before he died. Now, that's a dazzle shot.
Now, so Deepak walked away from this believing, I assume.
Yes, well, I would say certainly that he came away believing that these mediums were real and they could get very accurate information. But like you, he was still puzzling about, well, how do you know that they're really talking to my deceased father?
Mm-hmm.
And it's only later in the book, The Truth About Medium, do we start going into the kinds of experiments and information to lead us to the conclusion that this really is consistent with the idea that it's a living, conscious, intentional being that one is speaking with.
How many mediums and or psychics have you experimented on?
I've had the privilege now of working with over 20 different mediums. And most of these mediums are have been remarkably gifted. And, you know, at some point you come to the conclusion that there's a real phenomena here. And I think part of what's important about the writing of The Truth About Medium was the conclusion that, that, again, much to certainly my surprise, because I was not raised to believe that this was possible, some of these mediums are the real deal.
How do you try to rule out trickery or fraud, Gary?
That's a good question. Well, first of all, the experimenters have to have integrity, right? If I'm not telling the truth, and if my colleagues are not telling the truth, i.e. that we're cheating, then the whole thing's over. So you begin with the experimenter.
All right, what are the odds of a true scientist like yourself? What are the odds of scientists cheating, trying to sway the research?
Well, in my case, certainly, it's virtually zero. Okay, ultimately, no one. There's no way that I can prove to you that that my focus is truth. But the fact is, I did my PhD at Harvard, and Harvard's motto was Veritas, which means truth. I was on the faculty at Yale. Their motto was Lux et Veritas, which is light and truth. We've titled our research program the Veritas Research Program, and with the website's veritas.arizona.edu, and we talk about discovering the truth about survival of consciousness and the continuity of life. We're committed to finding out whatever it is, okay?
I mean, does the funding dry up if you were to say, hey, these people can't do it? It just doesn't happen.
Well, I would hope that the funding would dry up, because why would I want to continue doing research on something that didn't exist? I mean, I would waste my time.
Right.
But as I said, this is also not my primary area of research. You know, people sometimes accuse me and they say, well, gee, Gary, you know, you're doing this for fame, or you're doing this for visibility or whatever. And what people fail to recognize is that that's like, you know, wearing a sign on your back that says, if you have a foot, kick me. I mean, this is not something that you get prestige from in the academic world. It's something that invites all kinds of criticism and skepticism.
And some ridicule.
Extreme ridicule from a subset of both the scientific world and the skeptical world, and even sometimes even the medium world. I mean, it sort of comes with the territory. I remember, and at one point I describe in the book about how in a chapter dealing with James Randi, and why the skeptics are always proposing that this has to be fraud. And I was, I was lamenting the fact that I was being accused of cheating. Not, there was no evidence for it, but that's just what skeptics do. And a very famous professor of psychology who's worked in the field of parapsychology, by the name of Charles Tart, he sort of emailed me with a little pep talk or a pep email. And he shared with me, in fact, he said, you know, Gary, he said, if the only criticism that's left of your experiment is that you, the experimenter, is cheating, must be cheating, then you know you've designed a good experiment, because you've ruled out all the other possible ways that fraud could have occurred. So what we do is, as I said, you start with the idea that the experimenters have integrity. And then what you do is you design the experiment so the mediums don't have access to information, that that's kept secret from them, that there's no cues that can be communicated between the experimenter and the medium, so they're not picking up subtle information.
No pocket radios or transmitters.
No pocket radios
like
or transmitters and so on. In fact, we've done some studies where we actually had people come in and check the laboratory, you know, for devices. The other thing is that we tell the mediums that if we catch them cheating, we'll expose them.
Absolutely.
In fact, we actually published a paper where we did, well, in this case, it wasn't a medium, but it was a woman who claimed to have a certain paranormal gift, actually brought to me by a group of Chinese scientists. And we unfortunately discovered that this woman was cheating. And we exposed her and published the findings.
You need to bring Allison on this program. I'd love to have both of you on again.
Well, yeah, Allison is an extremely busy woman in her career at this point in time, and she's no longer involved with research in our laboratory. But it would be wonderful if you could get on the show.
Yeah, we'll work on that. We will work on that. So with these 20 mediums that you say had pretty darn good results, was there any specific one way better than the others? I mean, how would you compare, for example, Allison with the others? How did she end up with a network television show and some of the others did not, for example?
That's a very, very good question. I mean, Allison is a gifted medium. There's no question about that. And she does get certain details that are unique among mediums. For example, Allison affectionately refers to herself as a food medium. This is kind of funny because she often does readings and she'll get details about food. you know, macaroni and cheese or unique recipes or whatever that other mediums, as far as I know, just never get. Laura Campbell refers to herself as a hair medium. And I think it's partly because she was a hairdresser. But she, you know, she tones in on the tones and colors and shaping of hair and describes them in more depth than most mediums describe. So different mediums have different talents. And Allison is, you know, is certainly up among the very best that I've had the privilege to work with. But the reason why Allison, I think, has a television show was partly because she was committed to this kind of visibility. I mean, she was a competitive skater when she was younger. She's a very beautiful woman. She has a mission to get her story out. Also, she has a very unique personal history, you know, because here she is, sort of a young mainstream woman, you know, a mother with three children and a loving husband. And who was a political science major, you know, as an undergraduate. Yeah. She was going to be a lawyer. And she ended up, you know, focusing her work also in the criminal area. You know, she had this vision of if she couldn't be a prosecuting attorney and put people who had particularly abused children behind bars, then she would do it through her work as a psychic. And
I see that as a tremendous benefit.
Absolutely. There's no question about it. So the combination of her drive and her vision, her beauty and her devotion to the work her charm, as well as her gifts as a medium, I think all contributed to her having this opportunity. Also, this came about because she met Kelsey Grammer, actually participating in another television show which a pilot was made, but was not successful as a television show. And she was one of the five psychics that was picked as part of this show called the Oracles. And I was actually the consultant to that television show and recommended Allison to apply to it. Of course, she won it on her own. They examined over 100 psychics and picked her as one of the five. So she was, you know, she was picked because of her beauty and her talent and so on. But it was in the context of that she met Kelsey Grammer, and Kelsey saw the beautiful confluence of the story that could be derived based on her life.
All right, Gary, when we come back at the top of the hour, let's talk about some very famous people that somehow show up in your research. I'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM.